Raid on Bungling Bay. On a tiny, remote planet, the evil Bungling Empire is creating an awesome war machine. Civilization as we know it seems doomed. One faint hope remains. Welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Joe.
I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And today, at approximately 1 second ago, we learned that Raid on Bungling Bay and Lode Runner take place in a shared universe where as one's, like, helicopter is trying to destroy a galactic empire, another lone man is robbing their facilities.
I like to think of it in the way that Lode Runner failed. You know, this is the universe where he failed, and they kept all the gold, and they invested it in military technology.
No, you're wrong. This is a game that spans millennia. There's been a fight between the Bunglings and the humans for so long that they went from caves and gold to helicopters and war machines.
No, you're both wrong. This is a game where these two things are happening exactly simultaneously. Well, while you're in the helicopter shooting at bases, the other guy's in one of those bases collecting that gold and's got to get out in time.
Stay tuned next time for the fan fiction edition.
Yeah, you're all wrong because these two games are definitely not related, and this is a stretch by Broderbund, the publisher of the games, to try to link them up on their own because these games were definitely created by two totally different people.
Oh, and Santa's not real, huh?
Yeah, whatever. Doug Smith. Whoa.
We could be little children. Some listeners listening.
Yeah, that's fine. Sam's Jewish, so he could care less if people found out the truth about Santa.
No, I was saying.
And by truth, I mean
I was saying
like you don't believe.
False prophet.
I was saying it like you don't believe.
Yeah, don't tell me Santa's a false flag. Okay. All right. Raid on Bungling Bay. We have to talk about that. This game was developed by
William Wright.
Who is William Wright, Sean?
Will Wright is the developer of SimCity.
And
this game was pretty much what made him make SimCity.
Yes, that is true. I thought you could just keep listing off some cool things he's done, like The Sims.
Oh, well, yeah, but that's less important.
SimCity, The Sims, and most importantly, Spore.
Wait,
he must
was
hate that?
No, that wasn't him.
Yeah. William Wright.
That was Peter Molyneux.
No. Peter Molyneux is Fable, and then like the game with the tiger, right? Like
the tiger,
the Connectimals game.
What? Are you talking about Blanc and
White? I don't think he did. No, Connectimals is a totally different thing. But I just want to hold him responsible for anything that didn't pan out on the Xbox 360. Like it was his fault. He also had that game where you click on cubes. And
we're still talking about Peter Molyneux?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a game where you click on cubes and like eventually somebody was going to click the last cube.
Oh, yeah.
And then that person became God in a different game.
What?
I'm not joking.
No,
look
yeah.
all this up.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
He's a little bit too big for his britches.
But I admire
his aspirations.
You could say William Wright is almost the opposite, though, up until Spore. Like, he just kept envisioning bigger and bigger things each time, and they were succeeding. Like, first it was...
Well, he kept getting small. Well, okay. No, you're right. In the beginning, he kept getting bigger.
Yeah, I mean, you think of, like, SimCity is definitely an accomplishment, but I would say, like, The Sims is arguably a bigger accomplishment than SimCity.
But it is a smaller scope.
Smaller scope, but
it's more personal.
Really, yeah, I think it's more personal.
Well, it's a deeper dive.
Yeah, but that's not what I meant.
I think it's also more expansive than SimCity.
Just a house.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Yes,
yeah, but
that's true.
There's emotions and
you control everything about it and the person inside of you.
You can go to a job
instead
of going to your job.
There was also Sim Earth, which was kind of like weird and I didn't know how to play it, but I had it on Super NES. Then there was Sim Ant.
Yes.
Which was
Simcopter.
Simcopter.
You can't forget the Sims
Sim
Live
Golf.
In Large expansion pack for
Golf?
The original
Sims. Yeah, there
Sims.
Was Sim Golf. Yep.
Okay, that's.
There's a lot of expansions for the original Sims, too. And also, we should start talking about Raid on Bungling Bay.
Yes.
And I think it's important that we talked about William Wright, though, because I think, like, we can't understate his importance. Like, Doug Smith, cool guy, developed Lode Runner. I thought that was awesome. William Wright is like one of the like original like one of the original pioneers of video games. So this game, Raid on Mungling Bay, was released on the Commodore 64 first in 1984, and then came to the NES in September of 87. We're still on that long train of September. I think we said something like 17 games, which is weird because 17 games came out during the entire NES launch.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like, that's just September. Hudson Soft again for the NES version, which makes sense because Broderbund again for publisher for the NES, the North American version. Guys, let's talk about the gameplay for Raid on Bungling Bay before we go any further, because if we try to talk about this game without telling the audience what they're doing, I think like this one really surprised me. So who wants to take it?
I think I'll go ahead.
All right, Sean.
So in this game, you play as the single lone agitator in a war.
You're the military.
Yeah, you are the military. Just like you in several other games, you're the only person fighting for your side. But you're a guy who's based on a World War II era aircraft carrier, and you go and try to bomb factories before they build the war machine that will destroy Earth. But in the meantime, you have to deal with a slowly but surely evolving defense force that, if you're not quick, will create a battleship to sink your only hope of, like, just surviving.
Yeah, and on top of that, too, I can't overstate the whole, like, real-time element of this game, which is, like, the coolest part of it, is that time actually does matter because it's not about like, okay, now that you've defeated the first factory, the game gets harder. It's actually about time, and that the factories will continue to churn out more enemies. They'll churn out like tougher things. They'll become stronger. It's interesting how time plays in this game.
And there are other factors that like surprised me too. Like there are little radar satellites that if you're near one, it'll draw more enemies to you. Yeah. It's alerting the enemies as to where you are.
That's in the manual.
Whether or not like there are any like interconnected systems that are causing these things to happen, just the scope of the game, the fact that it's a 360 degree wrapping map that's pretty huge, combined with at least like the illusion that everything is sort of working together, like it really creates at least the effect of a simulation.
Yeah, it's all happening in real time. There's no loading screens. There's no cutscenes. There's no, like, when this thing happens, like, things will change. Things just change as they're, like, scripted to do through time. So you really do have to kind of, like, you know, rush to find these locations of the factories fast, because if you're not fast enough in bombing them, they're going to be able to rebuild themselves, too, and rebuild their army. So this way you won't be able to continue to take them down. And I like even one thing that's cool about this game is that other than the helicopter, which you control, there is a carrier that you can continue to go back to get some health and get replenish your bombs. But the interesting thing is that even that carrier is susceptible to enemy attack and can be destroyed.
Yeah.
And if that carrier is destroyed, that's kind of like, you know, now you're now this is what you have.
Yeah,
like
you got those bombs, and if you can't do it, then you're done because you need the carrier to reload.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about just the real-time element of things. Obviously, that was the gameplay mechanic, but how much did you guys feel it personally? I'd like to go around the room actually and just share experiences. So, Joe, how much did, like, you know, the factories building against you and like the army getting larger and larger feel in your gameplay experience?
At first, almost not at all. Actually, for a while, I just thought the game was getting more difficult. I didn't read the manual at first. I was kind of figuring out my goal as I went. I wasn't clear that I was supposed to be bombing the factories.
Well, because the game totally just drops you right in. It doesn't explain a thing.
Right. But after a while, I did start to realize that, you know, I noticed these satellites, they weren't attacking me, but I could destroy them. So
radar dish.
Sorry. Apologies, everyone. I looked into the manual about that and was like, whoa, these are actually affecting things. And then I started to realize like the amount of enemies that are coming at me. And eventually something, another battleship attacked my aircraft carrier. And that's where I was like, wow, this game is like really attacking me now. Like, and then I kind of started to piece it together. But it took me a little while to figure it out.
Sure. Sean?
It really comes at you pretty quickly after you've bombed a couple factories. And it does feel like a natural buildup. Like, I actually sort of... It is pretty immersive, this game, when it comes to watching things evolve on the ground. I really liked the fact that, like, in the midpoint, like, mid-factory destroyal section. Yeah.
How many factories are there? Do we remember? I think
six.
It was... Oh, six? Okay,
six,
I thought there were seven.
Seven.
But, yeah, I thought there were seven. No, you're probably right.
You can actually, like, see on some of the islands, or I guess continents, whatever you want to call them, full like airstrips or airfields, mm-hmm. and you could see the fighter planes or the bombers either like landing or about to take off. And I just really wanted to get them before they took off. It did feel like you were trying to slow an almost unstoppable force.
Yeah, Sam, anything dead?
Not really. I kind of just like, this is one where I looked at the manual after I started playing it and I was just kind of flying around a little bit, not really sure what was going on.
Just idly waiting for the army to come to you.
Yeah. And you know, they did after I looked at the manual and realized I had to be destroying factories.
I think like one thing you learned pretty fast too is that like if taking down a factory isn't as simple as just dropping one bomb.
Yeah, we were talking about this.
Like they take a lot, right?
Yeah, yeah. That I thought was a little bit annoying personally, but as far as like the systems of this goes, I thought it was interesting. Once I got into it, and you know, I was like, once I got an alert, that was kind of fun.
Yeah, I think like one thing that's really interesting is if you guys remember Miyamoto talking about with Legend of Zelda, how that idea that it would just be like one world that's just kind of like things are just going on, right? Mm-hmm. And we know that that's not true because things just animate on when you get to the next screen, but it does kind of feel like that. This game takes that a step further while obviously reducing the scale, just focusing on one particular mission. But I kind of appreciate this game a lot for the way that it like... The way that it set, like, a very clear objective, assuming you've read the manual, I think they could have done a little more legwork on, like, in the title screen or something to, like, also...
Just a paragraph.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But just, like, they do enough in just that one... The clearness of the one mission and just, like, the fact that the goal always remains the same of how to defeat factories, but they definitely, like, scale up in difficulty as time goes by, not just because they're also building themselves... But that, you know, it takes more bombs and there's only a certain amount of bombs you can carry. So by factory number three, you must stop at the carrier to pick up a second load of bombs because you won't have enough in a single drop to destroy the factory. And so that like added to the pressure too. And you have to, you know, it's easy to find your first factory, I feel like, because you can just kind of go off in any direction.
Yeah.
Mm. But in the later ones, you kind of have to think about, where have I been? Where do I need to go? Like, what have I seen?
Mental map, line marks. I also think one thing that this game does well is, like, switching between modes, like offense and defense. Like, you'll be off on a search, and then suddenly you'll get that alert, and now you have to completely change your perspective and say, like, okay, I have to... remember where I was and just get there as fast as possible. I think this game had a lot of tense moments in there.
I tried doing both at some points where, usually I just go as slow as I can over the factories to make sure I hit it. But there were some points where, you know, the planes are coming at me and I'm saying, all right, I'm going to shoot the
precision
planes.
Drop.
And then, yeah, precision drop to fly directly over the factory while I'm chasing planes and drop a bomb. And, you know, those moments felt really cool.
Yeah, I definitely felt like the fighter jets put on the most amount of pressure. Like the tanks were kind of like easy.
Yeah,
to,
the boats
to
don't really bother you.
Yeah,
the boats are just like kind of out for a nice
those
boat ride.
They might just be fishing just for all we know. Yeah,
but they're fishing as the enemy.
Yes.
Yeah.
The enemy is fishing, and we can't
those
let them
are,
have food.
Those are innocent fish. Yeah.
Switching gears a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like just going back down to a more like micro level of this game, the controls. The way that you control the helicopter is more of like a tank. Is this the first time that we've had like tank controls in an NES game?
No, I mean, I guess it depends on how you look at it. Like
it's
we've
like,
had, We've had similar things in what was it? Ikari Warriors had the tank where
but that was a little bit different. Yeah,
I think because what you're getting at is like if you're facing
any direction north, up is forward.
Yeah, if you're facing exactly. If you're facing north, then east is to your right. But if you're facing south, like maybe I'm describing this in a really weird way. If you're facing up on the screen, you hit right to go to the right. But if you're facing down, you hit right to go to the helicopter's right. So it's going
it's like asteroids control.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So, no, in that case, I don't think we've really had a game like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it caught me off guard a little bit. But once I realized what was going on, it was, it was great. I thought the controls worked really well. Yeah,
and there's also several levels of acceleration, too.
Yeah.
If you're going.
The manual says it increased.
Go ahead.
In the manual, I think it says it increases in 30% increments or something, all the way up to 100.
A standstill, too, which helps when you're over the factories, because you definitely want to be hovering over those factories.
And also the reverse, you have to hold down, I think.
Yeah. Yes.
You can't just go full reverse, which I think is also convenient, because if you're trying to brake and then all of a sudden you're flying backwards, Right.
And to be honest, as soon as I started using these controls, I was a little aggravated by them. But like you said, once I got the hang of it, I think that's the only way this game works so well. That's the only reason this game feels so good to control is like the way you can kind of swing around with these controls and
after
the acceleration. You don't have to hold it down to go forward. Like you set your acceleration to like one thing forward and focus on turning.
I'll be like orbiting around a tank or something, like going just out of reach and then coming back and then swooping in. It's fun to fly the helicopter.
Expressive maneuvering, I think.
And what do we think about the choice for a helicopter as opposed to like a fighter jet? Like, take it or leave it. Interesting.
I like it.
Idea.
I think it's definitely different. Like, it's not take it or leave it because you have the option to hover, like you were saying, and you have.
I think this game would be way too. I know that there is a lot of frustration in this game that we haven't really touched upon too much. But this game would be way too frustrating if you had to go at a fighter pilot speed at all times.
Right.
It's like the precision that you need in this game can only be done with a hovercraft or a helicopter.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it works really well.
So, Sean, you talked about some of the frustrations. Would you like to kind of crack open that one and talk a little bit about like what you didn't find satisfying?
Well, I think the first, I think the most glaring one is that the sound in this game is atrocious.
What about that sick music track?
It sounds okay. The music track is the least the least offensive.
Really, I thought the music track was. It's two notes.
Yeah, I know. But it's just like very low bass tones that you can sort of tune out after a while.
Yeah.
Whereas if you are in a fight, it sounds like a Nine Inch Nails breakdown where he just like smashes the synthesizer. It sounds like the sound chip can't handle it.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It sounds a little like it's peaking all
the time. Yeah, the fighter jets especially, I think, are just kind of, they're a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
But sometimes that's good though, because it's kind of, like this intimidating sound.
It is an intimidating sound.
I think one thing that frustrated me about this game, and maybe it was like part of the game's themes, was like there's like a fatalism to this game where it's like, I don't know about you guys, but there came a point where I was just always, sooner or later, I was like, well, it was a good attempt, but now the army has bested me. There came a point where it's just like, too much time has passed. You really had to like memorize where all the factories were. Or else, you're just not going to get to them fast enough. And now you're kind of like overwhelmed by the army that they've built and the fortresses they've created.
Yeah, it really reminds you that you're one guy against an entire planet's army.
Yeah. I think that one thing that really illustrates it that was definitely intentional is you don't just blow up like in a lot of the games we've played. Like you have a good few seconds to just accept what's happened.
And spiral out of control.
You are encouraged to try and like aim your crash at the factory,
right?
Like just to suicide into it because all hope is lost.
Yeah, I think one thing while I was playing like my first round of it was just kind of thinking like, okay, not that bad, but I just got to do it a little faster. And like the fact that became the motto each time I tried over again, I think there was a point where I kind of wondered like, okay, how much of this game is going to be reduced to like memorization of locations and how much of it is going to be chalked up to, like, can I fight the army or not? Because I think there is just a point where you become overwhelmed by it. And
I don't know if there's ever a moment where it plateaus. Like, I don't know where it's, like, max capacity for the other...
I'm not saying the game's impossible. Yeah. I'm saying that I think my biggest complaint is that in a game where it's, like, living and breathing world where things are happening, it is kind of weird that it encourages, like, a memorization.
Yeah.
And I almost wish that, like, this game... Like, the map changed each time.
It updates or something.
Yeah, you know, like so this way. Yeah, and just this way it was, like, you never got a chance to get comfortable, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, after a few playthroughs, I knew the first three I was going to hit because they were near each other. You know, I'd only have to go to the factory, back to the carrier, to the factory,
It doesn't even need to be, like, some weird algorithm that creates new continents. You just move the continents.
Right, no, exactly. Yeah. And I think, like, yeah, there would probably be, like, some that just offer, like, terrible balance, but yeah. I mean, we play the pandemic board game and that happens to us sometimes too with the luck of the cards, you know? So it's like, okay, just you had a bad run, reset, or oh, this was an easier time, but that's because in this timeline the Empire sucked.
The only thing that would kind of hurt is if I'm competing against you for a better score than you, then it's hard to be
true.
Like,
yeah, the game does have a score part too, which I just thought was strange, but yeah. I did like how it does reward, like, the quickness again. Like, mm-hmm. you do get a bonus if you defeat the things faster mm-hmm. than you should. And I don't know how it calculates that, but I appreciated that. Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, I was kind of like, I could care less about my score. There's a mission here. Like, that's really yeah, what exactly, I care yeah. about.
You gotta save the world.
Yeah, save which world? Oh, we're not sure.
Well,
but.
Yeah, but...
You gotta save the guy who's collecting the gold inside the...
Yeah, you're just trying to stall so we can get all the gold.
You're just a distraction.
Yeah, that's the lore now.
Does anybody else have any stray thoughts?
Well, I wanted to talk about two-player.
Okay, go for it.
Now, I didn't play with anyone, but I just wanted to see what two-player was all about, so I gave it a try, just to see what you're controlling. You're controlling... Player one is controlling the helicopter. Player two is controlling, like, the turrets and stuff.
Yeah, I like the cool. asymmetric multiplayer. Yeah. You don't see too much of that. Usually it's just, like, take turns or sort of like a messy co-op.
It was the best. It was the best solve here for sure because if you think about it, if you had a second helicopter, how would you control the screen?
Right. Like, yeah. It would have to be like a Sonic and Tails situation where the secondary helicopter is just there.
Yeah.
And we'll just.
Complete. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Whatever happens to it, screw it. Like, we care about player number one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I obviously, since I was just myself with two controllers, I only played for like a second. I'm not sure if you control anything other than the turrets or if you could ever control like a fighter plane or anything like that. But as far as I know, you're just controlling like the turrets.
I'm fairly certain that you only ever control the helicopter. But.
The player two.
Yeah, player two, as I'm saying.
Other enemies.
I don't think you control the other enemies. Right. I'm fairly certain you only ever control the turret part of the helicopter. But I think it's like a cool...
No. You're controlling the enemy turrets.
You're controlling the enemy. Like the turrets on the ground.
You're attacking player one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. I completely missed... I mean, obviously I didn't play two player, but I completely misunderstood what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you attack like the bad guys also?
Well,
I don't think so.
It would have to be all on the same screen. So this is true. Okay. We're all just sort of like turret. Shooting in the dark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like it though because we don't totally know what's happening. But I'm kind of more.
Yeah, we gotta play this.
I think I
like that less than what I read into. I read into the idea that like you were somebody was controlling the firing aspect of the helicopter, and the other person was controlling the maneuvering of the helicopter. And I kind of like that more as
I don't know. I find it more interesting that you are. Trying to fight the player
one. Yeah, I think that's cool because it's different. And
yeah.
And from what I gathered from my quick test of this is that whenever you're flying, whatever turret is on the screen, player two is just controlling that turret.
For me, that was something that I was like kind of sad I missed out on, but now I'm just kind of like, all he did was control the turrets, like whatever. I don't know.
Oh, really? I feel like that would change it for me.
That's unique to anything we've played yet. Like,
yeah, I just didn't feel like when player one has the ability to just kind of like control where they are in the environment, and you're just kind of like, I like the idea more of the co-op nature of it than just you're the turrets. I don't know, something about that just seems.
I like the asymmetric style of it, but to each their own, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. If we don't have anything else, straight thoughts, any others? No? Okay, cool. We'll go into some great developer quotes from the man himself, William Wright. Which one would you like first, publishing or gameplay?
I'll take gameplay for 400, Alex.
All right. This is William Wright on gameplay. I came up with the idea of this big scrolling window, and I'd always loved helicopters, so I just basically designed the endgame around the technology, around what you could do on the Commodore that you could not do on the Apple. While I was making it, I had to build other programs to help me build that program. I had to build a program that would realign character sets. Another one would let you scroll around the world and place these little tiles to build these islands and roads and such. I had more fun with that than actually flying the helicopter around.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that's what eventually evolved into SimCity.
That's interesting.
Whoa. You had more fun that's designing cool. the world yeah. part of it and then being like, wouldn't everybody else would like to do this?
Like, this needs a financial district.
I kind of get that, though, because there are a lot of like games or just stories in general that I like the lore or like the background world building more than I like any of the stories. So I could see that coming from the creator as well.
Yeah.
And then on publishing, a lot of people had spent years learning the Apple II, but the Commodore 64 seemed more of a level playing field because everyone was starting from scratch on that. So I bought my early Commodore 64 right when it came out and dove into it and learned every bit of it. I did my first game, Raid on Bungling Bay, on that, right around the time I moved to California. There was about, I don't know, maybe three game publishers near San Francisco. Broderbund was one of them. I just drove to each one and showed them this game that I was working on. I really liked the people at Broderbund, so I ended up working with them. What an interesting time to just be like, yeah. I'm going to drive to, like, I don't have any connections there, but I'm just going to knock on the door and be like, I made a game. Do you want to see it?
Wild West time.
Yep. And that's truly like that's what I get from every developer too, is just like, no matter who we talk to, whether it's Japan or America or Rare's interviews, it's always just kind of like, no one was doing this, but we were doing it. So we talked to people who were also doing it. You know, it's just weird to think that it was that easy to get into. And now it's something that people will try hard to do anything to get involved in.
Yeah. You know, it's a small market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And back then, I mean, like, you think about the game industry now and just how much like one company like Rockstar is taking from the pile, you know?
Oh my God.
And then think about like Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft too. It's like, it's such a huge industry. It can't be understated, I think. Like, you know, you think of it as just a $60 game purchase when you buy a new game, but you remember millions of other people are buying that $60 game. Like, those profit margins are huge compared to game, you know, like movies that sell at $17 a ticket.
Cash cow.
$17 a ticket in New York, I should say. Some people will be like, oh my gosh, that's unreasonable. Stay where you are. You're lucky if your ticket's only 10. You might complain about that, but we have to deal with 17.
Welcome to New York, kid.
And with that, we will go right into the essential games list. And that's a great segue into the essential games list. Guys, we're talking about Raid on Bungling Bay. You know, keep in mind that this guy made SimCity, The Sims, Spore, don't hold that against him. Keep in mind that he made those games. You know, I'm not saying that doesn't mean that you can like give this one a pass or not, but I definitely don't think we should hold it any more favorable because William Wright worked on it, just like we wouldn't give Miyamoto a pass on Donkey Kong. So with that in mind, Sean.
Mike, I first of all, I don't appreciate you trying to color my response.
Okay.
I'm not a more. I don't know what that doesn't mean.
Yeah, it's a more.
I was never going to put this on the essential games list. I am sort of in love with this game, but I know that just by the way that I voted in the past and by what we're trying to do with it, it's not an essential game. It's got a lot of cool features. It's got a lot of interesting systems. I think it's probably the most immersive game I've played on the NES so far. I love just like looking at this and seeing what all of the ideas turned into in the future. And I'm definitely recommending it to anybody that's into any kind of like whether it's planes, trains, and automobiles or you just like SimCity and you want to see where it came from or you just want to shoot down some shoot down some fighter planes. Just check it out, but it's not essential.
All right, I'm going to go next since we're spinning up the order here, and I'm going to say that this is maybe the first NES game that has surprised me. I didn't even think that something like this could be done on the NES. Just to put it in perspective, SimCity was supposed to come to the NES very late in the life cycle, and they have since found like a beta version of it, but of course it wound up going into like the early Super Nintendo launch. But these kinds of games are not really like present on this system. And so just to see something like this in its wide scope performing pretty well, keep in mind, like, I mean, we had like a few things that like are definitely like knocking it down, but I think as well as it performed, this would have been one of my favorite games around that time, you know, like in 1987, I would have been all over this thing.
Definitely.
But we have like evolved in gaming in general, like from that. And I definitely think that like this is something that hasn't been copied that much. Like we've seen the real time aspect play out in games, and we've seen the like aerial dogfight thing play out better in games. But the two of them together, not something you see every day. I'm definitely not going to put this on the essential games list, like just because, you know, you don't get on the essential games list just because you did something no one else has done. But I definitely think like if you haven't, if you're a guy who's been playing the NES for like a few decades, or you're brand new to the NES, I think that if you haven't heard of this game before and you know what William Wright has done and you like that kind of thing, this is going to be right up your alley, just like it was up mine and Sean's. Like, I definitely give this a huge play it, even if it's, like, for me, incredibly difficult. I definitely give it a huge play it just because it's something that you're not going to see again. I'm sure it has been done.
Please point it out, because I want to play it.
Right, exactly. I just think, like, those two elements being combined is, like, a rare fusion that we don't see too often. So I'm definitely – not only has it piqued my curiosity – it's a strong game, just not strong enough by today's standards to get it on the essential games list. Joe?
We didn't really say our initial impressions. I think that's important to know what my initial impression just from turning it on the first screen. My initial impression was like, oh, God, like it gave me very 1942 feels just by looking at it. So I was also pleasantly surprised, actually very similar to the way I was surprised in last week's episode. Lode Runner. That took me a second there. Not surprised enough to remember the name, but yeah, I think that based on a lot of the other things that we've seen on this system, this is definitely doing a lot more. It was more fun than I thought it was going to be, even before you found out that the world is like kind of reacting to what you're doing, which is just incredibly impressive. Biggest negative for me is the music, but that's not the reason that I'm going to say it's not essential. I think overall it's not something that I'm actively going to seek out to play again. I enjoyed playing it. I'd also say it's a play it, but not essential.
Sam?
I'm kind of in the same boat as everyone else. I thought that this was possibly the most unique game that we've played on this system. I haven't really played anything like it on other systems. I think that if it had some kind of progression system built into it, you know, where you can upgrade your helicopter or, you know, things change a little bit more, then it would be essential. If there was more to it, it would be. But there is a lot going on. There's like different systems taking place. And I think it's definitely a play it, but it's not essential. I think it has an amazing foundation, though, and it could be. It has potential, but it's not.
You definitely have me now hankering for a sequel where there are power-ups. Like, I think ability to upgrade the helicopter, and it's funny because we always think about, like, what could this game have done? We didn't touch that out here, but I really think, like, you hit the nail on the head there. Like, that is definitely something that, would definitely, like, sell me on a sequel. Like, it doesn't even need to be in the original version, but it should be there.
The closest game that I can think of that sort of, like, emulates parts of this game is sort of nothing like it. If you play Luftrausers, anybody?
No.
Okay, so Luftrausers is an indie game. It's you play as a single fighter jet that you can customize with different kinds of propulsion and firing types and bodies types. And you just sort of scroll around this this area where you can just do dogfights, but it's a lot more like trance inducing. It's a lot more fighting. There aren't it's not as like much of a simulation at all. But I think just like the movement style and the sort of just like the chaos that can unfold in front of you in air combat is like the closest I can get to what I've played in Raid on Bungling Bay.
I think that if this game and Gradius had a baby game together,
I was thinking Gradius too when you mentioned upgrades, you know, for some reason.
I think if there were like somehow like a boss fight where, you know, you fight someone else in a helicopter and you gotta like weave around each other or something, and, you know, upgrade systems so you can change your weapons, I think that would be an amazing game.
I also think that if we at some point play this multiplayer, if that is, you know, is well designed and is as fun as I feel like it could be, I think that could, I won't say that it would make me change my vote, but it would definitely take it closer for me.
Yeah, we'll have to do that before the end of 87 show.
Right.
All right. That is all the time we have for this episode of Nostalgia. A very surprising one, I think.
Yes.
Raid on Bungling Bay is one of those games that I had never heard of before this episode. So even as it was coming up, I didn't like look at it and be like, wonder what that's about. Also should mention that the cover for this game, the front box art, is like terrifying.
Deceiving. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a big skull on it. Game, like, yeah exactly. Yeah, I don't know if we're going to get any survival horror games on the NES. I think there is one that's been mentioned to me, but it was Japan only, so we'll have to, yeah, we'll have to go do that. Anyway, we will do that one time soon, hopefully. Go to Japan, hopefully, one day. I'd love to. And yeah, maybe Nostalgia goes to Japan, guys. The most expensive free podcast episode ever. Okay, I'm Michael Esposito. I make the website nostalgiacast.com. Go there for show notes and stuff. I also curate the Twitter feed, so go to @nostalgiacast on Twitter, and you'll see a bunch of things about Raid on Bungling Bay. You would have seen them this week, but you can check out next week's game, a bunch of promotional art for that, so that's cool, which is Ring King. So get in the ring, King. If you think you're the Ring King, challenge us to a fight. IRL, find me on the streets of Manhattan. Put up your fist, and I'll know what you're communicating. I think it's really cool that you're a listener of this show.
Before I
kick your butt. Now he's gonna kick my butt. all right, I'm Michael Esposito. You can find me on @EspositoFilm on Twitter. Don't fight me there. Only in real life, please. Thank you. Have a great day or morning, whatever, or go to bed, yeah, whatever time it is. Get 8 hours of sleep, please.